there, and welcome to the Church on the Ridge podcast. Before we head into our talk this week, we want to let you know about some ways you can find out more about us. Head on over to our website, churchontheridge.org, or download our mobile app. Also, feel free to check us out on Facebook and Instagram, where you can find out ways to live out your God-given purpose. We are so excited to share this week's talk with you, so let's go check it out.
So welcome. This is my wife, Sandy, if you have not met her, and we have been married for
35 years
and a month, 35 years and 1 month, almost a month. Yeah, almost 2 months now. Yeah. And it gets better all the time. We are almost kind of empty nesters. My daughter has just gone off to a mission school and she'll be there for 6 months. She's been there for now
A little over a month.
So we'll be able to speak to those of you who are going through that empty nest syndrome in about 6 or 7 years. Once we get it figured out. It's been an interesting time for us. But this morning, we're going to talk about building trust and breaking fears, or breaking fears and building trust. Fear is probably the most prominent cause for marriage discord. Relationship discord, and we want to lay a foundation for the future. And before we jump into that, we've been encouraging you in three areas through this series, Better Together. One, if you're struggling, welcome to the club. You're not alone. People struggle in relationships.
Yep. And two, if we can make it, anyone can make it. And we don't say that lightly. Truly, if two people, no matter how far apart, submit to God and to the process of getting better, then you can make your marriage work.
Yeah, our marriage was done. It was all but divorced. We were living in the same home and not connected in any real way. And yet God brought us out of that, and you'll hear more about that this morning as we go through this. And then the third thing we want to encourage you in is you do have to take an effort. You do have to take these principles and begin to apply them in your life, or else you're just hearing more stuff. And hearing more stuff doesn't change anything. It's the application of that stuff that actually brings the beauty and the benefit that you're looking for and that you desire in a relationship. Way, 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 way back when God started this thing called marriage, it was back in the Garden of Eden. You know, Eden, the word itself, means a place of delight. And I know that's the way I felt when I saw Sandy walking down the aisle on June 2nd, 1984. And man, it was just delight, just filled with this overwhelming sense of, wow, I can't believe I get to marry this person. And she was so beautiful and all the stuff going through. And this is what Adam and Eve were experiencing all the time. Every day, they're in the garden, in perfect unity. They were unified spiritually. They're unified emotionally. They're unified mentally and physically. All those ways, they're at peace with God, and they're at peace with each other. And in our 35 years and 2 months, we've had some times of experiencing that.
Yes. Yes. Not a full 35 years of them, but yes.
Maybe 35 minutes or two, so throughout that 35 years.
You know, 35 hours.
Yeah, you touch on it. You go, wow, this is it. And maybe you've touched on it before. Maybe it was that first, you know, those first hours of your relationship. But you go, I kind of know what it's supposed to feel like. But no marriage has ever stayed that way. Not even Adam and Eve's didn't stay that way. You know, someone said the secret to a great marriage, ask a couple, they've been married a long time, what's the secret to a great marriage? And the wife said, well, you know, to always recognize the other person is always right. And then they turned to the guy and said, hey, what's your secret to a great marriage?
What she said.
Adam and Eve are in this garden, right? Picture this garden like behind me here. And can you see, you may be too far back, but there's a serpent over there, mm-hmm. Right? Hey, God's holding out on you. Hey, it could be better. You're in a perfect environment. I don't know what could be better, but hey, it could be better. You don't have all there is. And that temptation came. And sure enough, Adam and Eve blow it. And in your relationship, something happens and temptation comes. And you go, oh, it could be better. And then fear enters in to the relationship, into the marriage. And from then on, it would never, ever be the same. Changed. It's Genesis 3, chapter 7 says it like this. Then the eyes of both of them were opened. Whoa. Oh, hey, you're not who I thought you were. And they realized they were naked, and so they sewed fig leaves together, and they made coverings for themselves. And this began the erosion of trust. This thing where they were in perfect harmony now began to decline. The intimacy was damaged. The honesty was damaged. This closeness was destroyed. You destroyed one deception, and they were destroyed? Yeah. Let me ask you, how many times do I have to lie to you to be a liar?
One.
Well, it's just one lie.
Right.
It's just one deception. It's just one mistake. And what happens? The erosion begins to take place, and all of a sudden it's, hey, well, if he lied to me about that, did he lie about when he stood up there at that altar and said those vows? Was he lying then too?
Yeah.
How do I know he's not lying about where he was? Do you see how it works? It's destroyed. No longer can I go back and go, I make myself not a liar. How do you go back? I'm an unliar.
Well, and even as I was contemplating a little bit on that verse, I don't think I had ever really camped there before and thought that through. But when you think, who were they hiding from? You know, I mean, realistically, why the fig leaves? It was them and God. And yet, they had to create a barrier. There had to be this break. There was this break of trust. And it's really quite fascinating to kind of just even consider that for longer than a second or two.
Yeah, it wasn't just a physical covering. There was an emotional covering.
Yeah.
There was a spiritual covering. They were hiding from God as well, and not just hiding from each other.
Who created them, and they knew that. And it just is this crazy thing. And so how much more so do we follow those same tendencies that when there's a break in trust, we go into cover-up?
Yeah. Look at verse 10. It says, Adam tells God, I heard you were in the garden, and I was...
afraid.
Fear. And so I hid. I was naked. I didn't want you to see me. I didn't want you to see that I was a liar, that I was deceptive, that I was who I am. The root of most, if not every, marriage problem that you have is based out of fear. You can kind of get it right back and go, oh, there it is. It's a fear issue. All our hiding, all our fig leaf sewing, and some of us have got massive fig leaves all over our body. We look like the sniper with the ghillie suit on, you know, right? And we're just covered. You're never going to see the real me. I got too much stuff. So I want you to write down these three ways that we tend to use fear to destroy our marriage, or fear is used to destroy our marriage, our relationships. First one is when we're afraid of our mistakes, we put up walls. The second one is when we fear our emotions, we withdraw. And the third one...
fear of loss of control.
Fear of loss, so we control, yeah. Let's start with number one, the fear of our mistakes. We're afraid to admit that we actually make mistakes. Mm-hmm. We don't like to admit it. I'm afraid that you're going to think less of me. I'm afraid that I'm going to have to look at me for who I really am. I want to look at myself through my own fig leaves, through my own deception. You know, I say something and you go, that was dumb. Oh, no, it wasn't. And it really was. And I know it was, but I'm not going to say it was. And I'm going to tell you all the reasons why it wasn't dumb, even though I really know that it was, but I'm not going to let that out. Instead of you thinking, you know, instead of just saying what's truth, I'm going, oh, no, I don't want to be seen as weak. I don't want to be seen as less than. If I admit my mistakes, my spouse may belittle me, may ridicule me, may laugh at me, use it against me, right? Exploit me at some point.
Yeah, so it's really that lack of trust. It was interesting, the clip that they showed just on that trusting teams, and shouldn't your marriage be the team where you have that trust? But it's that lack of trust that causes you not to be open, because you're afraid, what are they going to do with this information? So therefore, you stop speaking the truth.
And I had so much fear in my life. It was interesting. The first 10 years of our marriage, if you watch that, you would recognize that I was never wrong in those first 10 years. I'd never done a thing.
It was amazing.
Well, everything was her fault. I tell you, everything was her fault. I could twist things. I could spin things. I could make things to where it ended up being her fault. And you talk about a wall, man, a wall of fig leaves. Nobody's going to let you see who they are. If one, it's always the other person's fault. The other person is never wrong. How in the world do I ever want to get close to you?
So I couldn't share any fears, insecurities, or any mistakes that I made because he's just going to take it and run with it.
See?
Yeah. So
look at how Adam and Eve dealt with their fear of this. In verse 11, it says, God asked them, "Who told you guys you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree I told you not to eat from?" Like he didn't know, right? But it's a rhetorical question to him.
But I love the responses.
Yeah. The man says, "Guys, is this you? Is it me?" Yes. "The woman you put here, God, wasn't my fault. It was this woman you put here."
So not even just the woman's fault, but God's fault,
right? Right. What a spin. You know, this is where I learned it.
I know, so right there. First book of the Bible.
"She gave me the fruit of the tree and I ate it."
And then the woman said, the serpent told me to do it. So I'm off the hook too.
Immediately we put up walls of blame, accusation. We point fingers. Adam becomes defensive. The woman starts pointing fingers. And again, "I was really good at it. It's all your fault." "Well, you always." "Well, you never." "It's not my problem. That's your problem." If your marriage is stuck in this place of mediocrity, where, you know, it's going, "Well, it's not very good, but I guess this is just the way it is." Or it may be on a slide. Because typically, if marriages are not growing, then they're dying. And we look at marriages all the time. And if you're stuck, begin to ask yourself, what fear am I afraid of? What mistake have I done that I'm hiding? Have I sown a fig leaf to cover up? Marriages only grow when we face our mistakes. Marriages only grow when we face our faults. And that's scary. But when you fear, you continue and you perpetuate the problem when you hide that. I would blame it on Sandy. I would point the finger. I would convince myself even, logically, "Hey, this is right. I've spun this in such a way that it's her fault."
And then for me, I would just process and sweep it under the rug and not take the courage to say, "We need some help. We need to go get some help because we are stuck." And so it just continued.
And a lot of times you may be in a position like we were. We were a position of authority. We were pastoring a church. And how can you admit that you have mistakes, that you have faults, that you have failures when you're in that position of authority? Maybe you run a business, you have people that watch you, and you go, "I can't admit my mistakes." And it's killing your marriage.
Right.
It's destroying you. And here's what happens. You can ignore it, but it doesn't go away. You can pretend, you know, it doesn't exist. But we don't change until the pain becomes so unbearable. And most of the time it leads to divorce. Well, obviously, this is just the way we're interacting.
Right.
It's no problem with me. It's just the problem. It must be that we must not be compatible. It must be that we weren't supposed to be together. It must be that, again, we're not taking responsibility, but the pain is so great that those vows that you said, those things that you committed to, you're now willing to break.
And what we find is that until the pain to remain the same is greater than the pain to change, then change doesn't tend to occur.
Yeah.
But we have the opportunity to say, you know what, it doesn't have to get that painful. I can look before that pain to remain the same gets that great and say, no, actually, we can deal with this in a healthy way.
This is a true story. When finally we began dealing with our marriage issues, right? We finally said, "Hey, we need some help. We've got to get some help here." This thing had hit rock bottom. I had been found out, finally confessed some things that were absolutely awful and breaking my marriage vows. And coming to the place where, okay, we got to get some help. We're in counseling. And even through this brokenness of my own reality, it took
6 months.
6 months for me to... I've shared this before. I have a minor in marriage and family counseling, so I know everything, right? And I'm
super
sitting,
helpful.
Oh, educated. Yeah. we're sitting in front of our counselor. His name is Lonnie. Great guy. And how long was it again?
6 months.
6 months in counseling, where I am the whole time in my head going, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, how in the world? I hope he can help Sandy because he's got nothing for me. And before I finally went, you know what? I get it. I'm the problem. 6 months until finally I wake up that I didn't want to carry that pain anymore. And that was really the point of breakthrough. I mean, the catalyst put us into counseling, but that was the breakthrough for us to finally get out of the yuck.
Yeah. And for me, you know, because I had issues too. So for me, that was a painful 6 months. We have some funny stories now, 25 years later.
Can I tell one?
No, we don't have time.
No, let me just tell one.
Okay.
This is bonus. None of the other the gatherings got this. We leave the counseling office, right? And I've spun it to where it's her problem.
Yes.
Lonnie is listening, doing his thing. I don't know what he's doing, but he's doing his thing, and it's her problem. We leave the counseling office. We're driving down I-5, literally I-5. You just picture I-5, which is in Oregon, but I-5, it's trucks are going by. She goes, I do not want to be in the car with you. I cannot stand you. Open the car door. I'm getting out. I am walking. I go, what do you mean you're walking? We just left counseling. How could you be this way?
We were about 15 miles from home, but I didn't really care. So
she gets out. I pull over because she will not have this anyway.
Just going to jump.
She jumps out, and back then it's hard to appreciate, but we had car phones, but they had a wire attached to them still, so they had this wire, this coily thing. And I call Lonnie on the phone. I said, I'm trying to follow her. She's walking, trucks are blowing by, and you know, everything.
She's got the hazard lights on.
And she's walking, and she won't look at me. And I'm talking to Lonnie. He said, "Well, where is she?" She's walking on the freeway. Where are you? I'm trying to keep up with her. He said, "Well, can you put her on the phone?" I don't know. And I roll down the window. Sandy, Lonnie wants to talk to you on the phone. So she grabs the phone and she's walking as the car. She won't stop. So I'm trying to. And the coils. I don't know what he told you.
I had some issues too. All that to say, I had some issues.
Talk about the 10%.
So the great thing about Lonnie was, well, two takeaways from that. Number one, it would have been easy for me to say at that point, see, he really is such a jerk that there's no hope here and I'm out. And I had a lot of people encouraging me that that was the option that I needed to take. You know what? You need to just get out of this.
In a lot of ways, they weren't wrong.
True.
Yeah.
But I had prayed and knew that God had said, don't trust him. Don't even look at what he's doing. Trust me. So I have set this before you as a path. And if we have to change paths, fine. But this is the path. I'm going to restore your marriage, and you need to trust me. And that was the only thing I could hang on to for those 6 months. Because it's like, really? We're back to this again? And so I had that. But then Lonnie talked to me, and he held me accountable. And he was like, listen, Sandy, even if this is, not that we're going to put percentages, but it's 90% Charlie and it's 10% you, you're 100% responsible for your 10%. And that's a principle that I have lived by for the last 25 years. No matter if it's my relationship with Charlie, if it's my relationship with anybody else, if it's a work difference, I have to quit holding up the magnifying glass, pick up the mirror, and say, what of this am I responsible for? And then take 100% ownership for that and make some changes.
So don't let the pain become so unbearable that you're forced to change, you're forced into divorce. Why don't you take some great advice? Because I know if you're in this room, you have made mistakes. You have faults. You're not 100% perfect. You're not here. So own those things and begin to allow those fears to be satiated by the presence of God and some of the things we're going to help you with as we go on. So number one, fear of our mistakes, right, causes us to put up walls. Number two, fear of our emotions causes us to withdraw, to run away. And men, we're particularly good at this. We don't want to face our emotions. We don't want to face those things that we're being confronted with. We want to be cool and detached. And we go into our caves. We don't deal with these things. Emotions aren't manly. You know, to express emotions right. seems to be cowardice.
But again, it goes back to that trust. And that foundation of trust can only be built through honesty. But if I say to Charlie, "How was your day?" and he goes,
"What do we say, guys?"
"Good."
"It's good, yeah. How was work?" "Good."
But if he was to really come home and say, "Hey, I had this...
Yeah, rough time with my boss. My numbers aren't being hit. I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job at any minute. I don't think the people there like me. It just scares me to death.
And if my response is, "Wow, what do you mean? You need to work hard," and I just jump all over that, then he's not going to trust me with that information. So we have to be trustworthy, and the inverse is true.
And typically for a woman, when they ask us guys how we're feeling, it's not so they can pick things apart.
Right.
It really isn't. They just want to know what we're feeling.
Yeah.
And our fear
be supportive.
Puts this wall up. So what happens? I don't even know this guy.
Yeah.
Man, we hear the complaint all the time. "Pastor, he just won't talk to me. I don't know how he feels." Right? Before we were married, oh man, we would talk all night long. We would stay in the middle of the night and, you know, it'd be like, "Okay, no, bye. Okay, you hang up. No, you hang up. Okay, no. Oh, I can still hear you breathing. Oh, all right."
You know, I was not like that. If you haven't picked up on that, that was not me.
Somebody said... Back then, it was long distance for us to call, so it was a whole accounting thing.
I was worried about the money,
yes. So. Some guy said, if a man opens a door for his wife, you can be sure of one thing.
Oh, boy. The joke's got to go. Anyway, there's three levels of communication.
Let me finish.
I was being honest. We got to have a
If a man opens a door for his wife, you're sure of one thing. Either the car is new or the wife is.
Yeah, whatever. See, I told you. I was trying to save
Joe's
the
on my team. Thank you, Joe.
Oh, all right. Goodness. But right. If we don't have that trust, if we don't have that honesty, then we are never going to have that intimate conversation and communication that keeps our marriage alive and thriving. And it basically just kind of filters down to this surface type of conversation.
Yeah, three levels of communication. And we start off with the third one, but we end up in this mediocre place of marriage with the first one. The first one is surface level. Hey, how's the weather? Who's picking up the kids from, soccer practice? Oh, don't forget, we have, ham in the freezer we got to pull out.
Yeah. Did you see Cheryl? She was bringing in some big plastic bags to her house today. I wonder what she's up to.
God, they're dealing meth out of there, I'm sure of it. What is that called?
Gossip.
Gossip, right? Our communication.
We get down to gossip. That's basically what our communication
the surface level stuff.
Deteriorates to.
Every once in a while, we'll hit level two. Again, our marriages are mediocre. We'll hit level two, and that's when we share an idea or an opinion. Oh, hey, what do you think about this? Oh, I think we ought to have pizza. Ah, pizza again, right? And okay, well, I know I better not share my opinions anymore. So we just revert back up to level one. And really, where God has intended marriages to be, quality relationships to be at level three, which is the sharing of feelings, the gut level stuff, the real stuff, the stuff of your heart, the intimate communication. It's the deepest level. H. Norman Wright wrote a book on it, Communication Key to Your Marriage. If you're into making your marriage better, I would encourage you to pick it up. It's an older book, but it's absolutely appropriate for today. Every person, he says, in the world needs someone they can be gut level honest with, where they can be all the fig leaves are gone, like the Bible says, naked and not feeling anything, but unconditionally honest and know they're going to be loved and accepted. And if you remember back in the garden, that's how it was. We're just totally honest. There's no deception here.
Yeah.
There's no break in this thing.
And if you're not getting that from your spouse, you're going to find someone else to get that from.
And what happens?
And then there's more division. And so for me, going back to what we talked about 2 weeks ago, my mom still provided that role for me. I couldn't trust him, but I could trust my mom. And so I never had that breaking with my mom that needed to occur because she was the person I could share my feelings with.
And fear keeps you from going to that third level, the most important level of communication with your spouse. And we usually see it in one of three areas. Norma Wright speaks to it. And the first one is hurt feelings. Hurt feelings. You get your feelings hurt. You don't have to raise your hand because it may have happened today, but anybody have their feelings hurt in your relationship? Oh, yeah, right? And a lot of times the person that didn't mean to, right? They're not thinking they're hurting your feelings. They're just doing something. You know, all I'm doing is just taking the corner, you know, a little bit fast. And I hear, you know, if you would slow down around that corner and actually stop the stop sign, it'd probably be better for, you know, everybody in the car. Right?
And then instead of being honest about that and being able to circle back, maybe not in the moment, but circle back to the conversation and said, you know, when you said this, that was actually really hurtful. So can we talk about a different way you could have communicated that with me? And again, having that kind of conversation took us years of counseling to get to for me. But instead, my go-to was I was going to put in a little comment, make it sound kind of funny, and try to hurt him back. And that's what a lot, again, of relationships deteriorate to, just kind of this zingers.
And typically, guys go into their cave, but in our relationship, Sandy was the withdrawer. She would pull away from it and, go quiet. You know, hey, is anything wrong?
No.
Did I hurt you in some way?
Nothing. I'm fine.
Right. Well, all right. And hiding the hurt only intensifies it.
Yeah.
Right? It makes it worse. You get it out in the open, it can be dealt with.
So hurt feelings, and then the second thing was...
One lady said, I gave my husband the silent treatment for...
No, I'm trying to skip over the jokes.
For a whole week. And then he came to me and said, hey, we've been getting along pretty good lately, haven't we?
Second, hurt feelings, and second is negative feelings. We deny that we're not liking something about our spouse or actually just not liking
Ethan,
our spouse.
Ethan, don't raise your hand this time, but any of you ever had that moment where you didn't like your spouse? Like, man, she is a... And oh, Trisha's got her hand up. And he's out.
And
you can't see it on the camera, but Ethan has now left the room and... they're on staff with us. We're going to get them some help. Some days... come to the marriage retreat. Some days, right, you can't stand the person you married. And that scares you to death because you're like, whoa, aren't I supposed to love this person? Didn't I say I was going to love them? And I don't like them right now. And so instead of actually talking about it, getting it out, dealing with it, we push it down, we push it down, we push it down. And we go, oh, man...
And then we allow that thought, you know, the whole progression of temptation, thought, action, and then turning into habit, and then your lifestyle, is you let that thought swirl around. I made a mistake. This was not the person I was supposed to marry. And you let that start thinking, and then it starts impacting your actions. And then it becomes a lifestyle, and we had friends that were just like, Sandy, you are so closed off, shut down, and your only interaction with Charlie is saying kind of these joking barbs to him. And then it became the destiny without God's intervention.
Yeah, and Trish, can I encourage you? It's normal to feel that way. Not every day is the Garden of Eden. Not every day is perfect. It's okay to have negative feelings towards your spouse.
But
it's going to happen.
But when you confess them and say, hey, I'm feeling this way,
wow. It
breaks that secret and it breaks that cycle. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, I had the temptation and I go, whoa, I have this thought. I'm not liking you. And then together you work on it.
Number three. Sexual feelings. So you got negative feelings, hurt feelings, and sexual feelings. This one scares us to death. You know, married couples are afraid to express themselves in this area. How do they talk about it? Look at Adam and Eve's reaction to it. Verse 7, their eyes, both of them were open. They realized they were naked, so they sewed fig leaves. I don't want you to see me this way. I'm afraid of what I look like. I'm afraid of what... you're going to think of me. We have body images. We have machismo issues. And immediately and instinctively, they covered themselves up and said, whoa, whoa. They pulled away. The intimacy was destroyed then. I don't really know this person. I can't really see the real person. I'm not hearing from the real person. The contrast between how they dealt with their the way they were with each other in Genesis chapter 2, before the temptation, before fears enter in, is so amazing. Look at verse 25.
The man and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame. And then there's this huge shame after sin entered the equation.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful when there's no shame in the relationship? Right? You don't have to sew any fig leaves. You don't have to worry about what are they thinking. Fear makes us self-conscious. When there's fear, there's no sexual intimacy. And
it's been that way now.
Yeah.
Ever since.
A recent study said that 80% of couples in America are dissatisfied and are frustrated with their physical relationship.
That's staggering.
Yeah. Why is that? Let me tell you, they're unable to talk about it, right? They're unable to say, hey, here's my needs. Here's what I enjoy. Here's what I like. And they're afraid to express their preferences. And we're frightened by our sexual feelings because they're so close to us. And even Christians, inhibited by maybe previous experiences, their past, some hurt or brokenness in their past. And they bring
this
it into their present.
Yeah, this is just an area where you need honesty. And if you feel like any of these areas, hurt feelings, sexual feelings, emotional feelings,
negative thoughts,
that you can't have those kind of conversations safely or get your viewpoint out, seek help. Because that fear of seeking help and taking that next step is that barrier and might be the avenue of breakthrough for you.
Yeah, too many people lie in bed at night, you know, going, I wonder what they're thinking. What are they thinking? No, they're probably not. What are they thinking? God didn't make us to be mind readers. You know, that's God's job. And then we play this game. Is there anything wrong?
No.
Right? If you love your spouse, let them know. Tell them. Touch them. You know? Bring it out in the open. Some people think, oh man, if I show my emotions like that, if I express myself in this way, it's really a form of
an opportunity for rejection again.
Yeah, an opportunity for rejection, yeah. And I'm afraid, so I don't have the courage. And we think, well, we're all, you know, guys, man, hey, I'm brave. It's the most cowardice thing in the world to stay there silent. Well, what takes more courage, to open your mouth and say, sweetie, I love you. I'm so glad I married you. Man, it was the greatest day of my life. I'm so happy that we're together. Thank you for being my partner. Man, or to just sit there and be quiet about it. I'm telling you, you're a chicken if you sit there in your quietness.
Yeah. So we have our fear of...
Stakes. We put up
failures,
walls.
Yeah.
We
fear
our
of emotions. And then also, we're afraid of loss, and that loss is associated with control. And so, therefore, we become controlling.
And insecurity is seen in controlling attitudes. Attitudes like, I always have to have the last word. And this was again, our motive, my motive. I always had to have the last word. And I would spin it in such a way, and I learned, you know what? Why do I have to have the last word? Oh, I'm trying to control the situation. And I've learned, guys, here's how you can always have the last word. Just say this. Sandy, you're right. I got the last word. Honey, you're right.
Yesterday, it was so funny. I opened up our linen closet, and there were just things like had fallen. And I'm a little bit of an organized person, and so that wasn't great. And I was like, how did this happen?
And I blamed it on the cat.
And I was like, this is just not okay for me to, you know, have this and no one put it back right. And Charlie, in years past, would have blamed it on the cat or said, you know, you're just so type A and anal and, oh my goodness, this is your problem, not my problem. You need to just go with it. And instead, he's like, what can I do to help? And we worked together. It took about 2 minutes and we fix it up. And it's not that I'm ruling, but it's just that whole sense of partnership then is built instead of it becoming a fight.
Yeah. Yeah, we averted a fight. This controlling issue, afraid of losing control. Who's got to be in control? Do you have to always drive? You have to always get your way. You have to demand your rights. You make statements like, well, not in my house, because, you know, when you look at Genesis chapter 3 and you see the consequences of what took place when they allowed fear and they fell to the temptation and the sin that began to destroy them, and the consequences of that, they're pretty harmful. They're really awful. The one effect was a struggle for domination. Look at verse 16. God says to Eve, your desire. That word in Hebrew means your dependency. Before, there was no dependent upon each other. It all worked. Garden was perfect. There's no need for dependency. It says, will be for your husband, and check this out, and he will rule over you. First time this word is used in a relationship. Hey, wow.
Yeah.
Anybody like being ruled over?
No.
No, in fact, America was birthed out of this idea that, hey, wait a minute, we don't have people rule over us. It's a natural thing. We want to be free. We want to be autonomous in ourselves. And the tragic consequences of sin is for domination. Who's going to dominate the relationship? And in our relationship, I would power up. I'd use my strength as a man. I'd use my spiritual manipulation, knowing the Bible. I would do things that I would dominate so that I would be in control, because, man, there's no way I could lose control.
Right. So James 4:1 says, what's causing the quarrels and fights among you? Don't they come from the evil desires at war within you? You want what you don't have, so you scheme and kill to get it. You're jealous of what others have, but you can't get it, so you fight and wage war to take it away from them. And how tragic that that's in our relationships as a married couple.
I got this desire. I want her to do this. I want her to do this. I want her to do this. She's not doing it. Hey, I got to be in control here. I can't lose this thing. So start to push. And what happens? Whenever you feel like you're being dominated, you're being ruled over, what do? You pull away. You
pull
either
away
fight
or
up.
React.
Yes, and the fight comes. Couples are constantly fighting with this one issue of control. Who's going to be in control?
And the fact is when you got married, you gave up rights. You said, you know, in sickness and in health, for better or for worse, I am saying I'm going to prefer you. And so that is a right that you gave up, to say, I'm going to prefer me right now.
Secret to a great marriage is yielding your rights.
Yeah.
What? Watch. Watch what happens when you do. If one partner tries to be in control, it pushes the one further away. You know, manipulation doesn't work. Ladies, nagging doesn't work. Trying to power up guys doesn't work. You're not going to change anybody. We don't use manipulation and guilt here at Church on the Ridge to try to, you know, change people, because we know it doesn't work. There's no way. Jesus didn't come into the world, he said, to condemn the world. To, hey, you know what, you guys, I'm the king of the universe. You need to submit to me. And no, he came to save it. He came as a servant, right, to show us how to really live. How are we going to get to that place in our relationships? How are we going to change?
And first, we have to be honest with ourselves. We have to admit, and not in a general kind of way, but a specific way. Like I said, put down the magnifying glass, put up the mirror, and say, where are my weaknesses? Where do I have faults? Where have I failed in the relationship?
I have to admit that I'm frightened by some of my feelings, right? Some of my emotions. I have to admit that, well, this is scary to me, and I have to identify it. Again, not just go, oh, I'm just a guy. And no, what are these emotions that I'm going through?
And then I have to try to change.
I have to admit that I'm trying to change you, trying to control you, right? I am a controlling person. If I admit that and be honest with myself, yeah, why do I have to be in control? And if I look at my past, and sometimes you have to start peeling back the layers of the fig leaves to get to the real issue, and something has happened to you where you cannot be out of control. The Bible says in Proverbs 28, you will never succeed in your life if you try to hide your sins. Again, that's the fig leaf picture. I'm going to hide behind these.
Confess them and give them up, and God will show mercy to you. So confession, though, is a key element there. We have to confess.
And here's where I was. 1 John 1:8. I mean, I knew the Bible, but, you know, you pick and choose the ones you want to read, right? If we say that we have no sin, oh, it's not my fault, it's her fault, it's her problem. We're a liar. Back to the deception, the fig leaves, and the truth is not in us. How many lies does it take to make me a liar? It's one.
Yeah.
It's me.
So we have to be honest with ourselves, and then we have to be honest with God. I mean, again, the picture in the garden, they hid from God. What? how do you hide from God?
And it's not like he doesn't already know.
And yeah. We try to hide from God too.
Yeah, try to convince ourselves that God knows we're really good people when honestly, I was not a good person. I was a good preacher. I was good at, you know, being a pastor, but I was not a good person.
Yeah. 1 John 1:9-10 says, God is faithful and reliable. If we confess our sins, he forgives them and cleanses us from everything we've done wrong.
You know, that was that moment when I finally come to God and go, God, I need help.
Yep.
I'm a sinner.
Wrong.
I was wrong.
Yeah.
And he didn't condemn me. He didn't ridicule me. He didn't make fun of me. He didn't laugh at me. His grace came in. And not only for me, but allowed to flow into our relationship.
Yep. And I had to do the same thing.
You know, I had such a pile of sin. Just the last 10 years of our marriage. I had a mountain range. And the Himalayas is like, whoa. And God said, I forgive you. I didn't even know all the things that I was capable of. I love the Psalm 19. It says, who can notice every mistake? I didn't even know all the stuff that I was capable of. But he forgave even my hidden faults.
Yeah.
Wow. I know the three most difficult words that we can say, and you struggle with them. I was wrong. I need help. Why don't we try that this morning? Can we say three words? I need help. Let's try that out loud. Here we go.
I need help.
Some of you had even found it hard to say it, or you couldn't even say it. You let other people around you say it. And you know, it's just three words. You should be able to say it, but there's something in us that revolts against us. We're going to lose something. When the reality is, if you don't say it, you will lose everything. And when you say it, you gain freedom. Psalm 34.
Yeah.
I went to the Lord for help. He didn't laugh at me. He didn't ridicule me. He didn't reject me. He answered me and rescued me. Some of you need rescuing this morning. And your fears are destroying you.
Be honest with ourselves, be honest with God, and be honest with our spouse.
Eventually, it takes us to the place where the one that we committed to, we've got to tear down the fig leaves as well. And start with us, turn to God, and it comes to the place where, okay, this is who I really am about our mistakes.
We have to be honest about our mistakes, yeah. About our feelings and about our loss.
James 5 says, confess your sins to each other. Yes, God hears them, but we eventually confess to each other, pray for each other, and that's when healing takes place. You know, our dream for Church on the Ridge, Sandy and I started this thing 16 years ago. We moved here, and we had been part of some great churches, but many of the churches that we had even pastored and been a part of were fig leaf churches. Churches where people knew how to dress on Sunday and dress like Christians and look like Christians. And everybody came in the room. We all acted like Christians. And we all acted like we were all, our marriages were together and everything's wonderful. And everybody's happy. And you ask people how they are. And everybody's fine. Everybody's fine. Everybody's doing great. And we believe God and trust God. And we discovered something. If it was true for us, it's also true for everyone else. Not everyone's fine. In fact, when we started this church, we would talk about it with Jeff. We said, hey, let's put up a sign that says, no perfect people allowed.
You're just going to mess it up.
Yeah. let's make a hospital for hurting people. People can be honest and open and real instead of a hotel for saints. You know, oh, they have a nicer church than we have. And you know, that's likely, you know. Now, Pete and Mary Kay will be teaching next Sunday. And they're going to be doing our Life's Healing Choices series starting in the fall, where it's just an opportunity for us to get past our past and to see ourselves for who we really are, because no one's arrived. No one's got it all together. We all have hurts. We all have struggles. We all have failures. We're in the same boat. Let's grow together. Let's make a great church for the people that are out there looking at us going, you know what? I want that one place I can be totally honest, totally real. Honesty is not going to solve all your problems, but it will be the foundation. Without that foundation of trust, I don't care how many vacations you take, what new house you buy, what new car you get, how many more kids you have to try to save your marriage, it will tumble. The foundation's got to be there. Let me pray for you. Father, thank you for your grace. Thank you for the amazing forgiveness and the work you did in healing. And Sandy and I cannot thank you enough. Thank you for bringing me to that place of pain where I finally turned my face towards you. And maybe you're here this morning and you need to do that. Do some introspection in your own heart and life and be honest with yourself and go, you know, I may be only 10% of the problem. recognize you've been stubborn. You've been afraid. Maybe you need to confess to God, Lord, I need you. I'm a sinner. I've blown it. I got a mountain of garbage in my wake. I need you, Jesus. Bring healing, forgiveness. In Jesus' name, amen.